Genesis 18, begin reading in verse 20. And the Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which has come unto me, and if not, I will know. And the men turned their faces from thence and went toward Sodom. But Abraham stood yet before the Lord. Notice, but Abraham stood yet before the Lord. And Abraham drew near and said, wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Peradventure there be 50 righteous within the city. Wilt thou also destroy and not spare the place for the 50 righteous that are therein? That be far from thee to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked. That be far from thee. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? The answer, of course, is yes, he always does. And the Lord said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes. And Abraham answered and said, behold, now I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord, which am but dust and ashes. Peradventure there shall lack 5 of the 50 righteous. Wilt thou destroy all the city for lack of 5? And he said, if I find there 45, I will not destroy them. And he spake unto him yet again, and said, peradventure there shall be 40 found there. He said, I will not do it for 40's sake. And he said unto him, oh, let not the Lord be angry. I will speak peradventure there shall be 30 found there. And he said, I will not do it if I find 30 there. And he said, behold, now I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord. Peradventure there shall be 20 found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 20's sake. And he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry. I will speak yet but this once. Peradventure 10 shall be found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 10's sake. And the Lord went his way as soon as he had left communing with Abraham. Listen. And the Lord went his way as soon as he had left communing with Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. I'm going to try to preach this evening on Abraham's prayer. It's amazing to me, this prayer. Abraham doesn't give up. The interesting thing is that he's not really praying for himself. He's praying for somebody he cares about. He's praying for family members, his nephew Lot and his family. They have ended up in Sodom, and God comes and tells Abraham that Sodom's going to be judged. Their iniquity is full, and God must, and he will deal with sin, and the end of Sodom and Gomorrah is quick coming. So Abraham doesn't just ignore it. He doesn't just sort of accept the facts, but he talks about to God, what about those that are righteous in this city? No doubt he's thinking about his nephew Lot and his family. It is his desire that God would somehow, listen to this, have mercy on these people. I think if there's anything our country needs now, it's mercy. I do not want what we deserve, because we deserve judgment, and we may just be getting some of it now. But I do know this, I need mercy, and we need mercy, and our country needs mercy, and I believe Abraham recognized that. Abraham begins to pray for Sodom and Gomorrah and for his nephew Lot. It's a good example of prayer. It's a good example of fervent prayer. It's a good example of consistent prayer, agonizing prayer. He goes from 50 down to 10. Probably Abraham thought, well, surely there's Lot and his wife and his children and their family, and surely there's got to be at least 10. And Abraham stopped at 10. Unfortunately, they had not won anybody to the Lord, and there wasn't even 10 there. But his prayer is something that we need to take a look at. It's a prayer that intercedes. if you notice in these verses, I've said it already, he's not praying for himself, even though he's included. We'll see that in a minute. He is praying for someone else. He cares enough to pray. The word intercede means to plead the case. It's like a lawyer pleading his client's case before the judge. And he goes to the judge on behalf of his client, and he makes the evidence known, or he pleads the case. He's pleading to the judge for his client's sake. And that's exactly what Abraham's doing here. He is pleading for mercy for his nephew and those he cares about, and also the city they're in. He is interceding. He's praying for someone else. And if there's anything we need to do now, it's to pray for our country and to pray for those we know about. I mean, look around at the empty spots where people are usually here. Some are in the parking lot, there's no doubt, but some are sick. Some are going through circumstances that are difficult. You yourself may be one of those. But we need to learn how to pray for other people. It's a prayer that intercedes. I have difficulty believing that we care very much for others if we don't pray for them. The least we could do is pray for them. But I thought also the most we can do is pray for them. Because when we're touching God on their behalf, we're getting to the one that can do something. Brother Albert said it this morning, that God can go all the way to California and touch the person that Gail just requested prayer for. We can't do it, but God can. It's beyond our ability, but it's not beyond His. It's beyond our capacity, but not His. It's a prayer that intercedes. He's talking to God on behalf of his nephew. Now, we talk a lot, and we ought to, about talking to people about God. But we need to talk to God about people and pray for them and ask God to touch them and to have mercy on them, or to deal with them, or to help them, or convict them, or save them, or encourage them, or enlighten them, or direct them, or empower them, or whatever they need. If you know somebody going through a struggle, pray for them. Pray for them like you would want them to pray for you. That's what the preachers say when we go to the preacher's meeting. Pray for me like you would want me to pray for you. And that's what we need to do. He's praying a prayer that intercedes. He's praying for someone else other than himself. And I want to tell you something. Somebody needs your prayers. Someone needs you to pray for them. Last week, I believe it was, I said, Lord, please put on somebody's heart to pray for me. I tell you what, I believe God hears and answers prayer. And I can pray for myself, and I do, and I did. But sometimes I need more than just me, and other people do too. I said it often, if God puts somebody on your heart, pray for them. Don't just think about them. It's a prayer that intercedes. It's a prayer that inventories. Look in verse 27. Abraham said, I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord, which am but dust and ashes. When he was praying for someone else, in that prayer, God showed him himself. And he said, I am not worthy to ask, but I ask anyway. I am dust and ashes. It's a prayer that inventories. It checks up. You know, a lot of you have worked at places where you take inventory. What that is you go and look and count and find out what you have. And that's what prayer does. Just like Isaiah, woe is me, for I am undone. Ah, my goodness, when he started seeing God as he was, he started seeing himself as he was also. And this prayer did a lot for Lot and his family, but it did a lot for Abraham too. And that's why we need to pray. because in the midst of our prayer, God will show us ourselves. We'll see something in prayer we don't see any other place. I say that about church, and it's true. God will do some things here He won't do anywhere else, and some things God will do in prayer that He won't do in any other place of our life. We do not see a man that's arrogant. We do not see a man saying, I didn't go down to Sodom. I didn't go down. I didn't do like Lot did. But you got to help him, God. I know I'm not like him. Oh, no, he comes humbly because he sees himself as he is. He says, I am dust and ashes. I'm unworthy to ask, but I ask anyway. I don't deserve to come to your presence, but I come anyway. And I believe in essence, we need to say, Lord, search my heart and show me myself. Even when we're praying for somebody else. By the way, our condition matters as far as our result in prayer. And if we aren't on praying ground, if we're not right with the Lord, we can ask all we want to, and He probably is not going to grant it. And we can maybe pray for others, and God can show us a need in our own life in the process. I believe Abraham had the attitude of, Lord, show me myself and don't be gentle. Don't hold back. Show me myself as I am. And I'll say it again, I'll go on. There's no better time on earth than when we're praying for God to show us ourselves. That can happen when you hear preaching. Hope it does. That can happen when we're reading the Bible by ourselves. I hope it does. But it can happen even more so sometimes when we're praying. It's a prayer that intercedes. He's praying for somebody else. It's a prayer that inventories. As he's praying for somebody else, he sees his own need. I wonder, though, I said I was going to go on. I will in a minute. Wonder if Abraham thought, Lot said Sodom, and it's partly my fault. Because God told Abraham, you leave your homeland and you leave your family. And Abram at that time obeyed mostly, but he brought Lot with him. I wonder if Abraham is praying, and one of the reasons why he says, I am dust and ashes, is because Abraham realized, had I not disobeyed God, Lot wouldn't be where he is. I'm telling you, it's a prayer that intercedes. It's a prayer that inventories. It's a prayer that interferes. If you look in verse 20, God said, their sin is very grievous. Their sin is very grievous. It grieves me. It hurts me. It angers me. It moves me to act. I have called and they've ignored. I have warned and they've listened not. I've tried to help them and they've shunned me. And the time has come that my mercy has run out, and I'm on the way to judge them. And I'm on the way to judge them because their sin is very grievous. That means Sodom and Gomorrah and most of the people in there were under the control of Satan. They were living as the devil desired. They were doing what they pleased. And here's God on the way to judge. And Abraham is praying for them. So there's an interference, in other words. Abraham is saying, I know they're right for judgment. I know you will be right to go and judge them. But God, I'm asking you, give them mercy. And had there been 10 there, He would have granted mercy. So this prayer, if you will, is interfering, holding back the wrath and anger and judgment of God. I wonder if we don't need to do that with our country. I wonder, I hope we're not too late. I wonder if we don't need to beg God, Lord, please, we deserve judgment. But hold off a little bit longer. Give us another chance. It not only interferes with God's judgment, but it interferes with the devil and all that he's doing. Abraham's prayer is in essence saying, stop what the devil's doing, God. Jump in there and hinder what the devil wants to do. He wants to wreck and ruin those people. He wants to keep them in sin. Listen to me. He wants to keep them under the bondage of sin. There's a lot of people we're praying for, or we ought to be praying for. They're in the bondage of sin. They're under the influence of the wicked one. And our prayer can make a difference. Our prayer can touch a God that can break that bondage. Well, I'll tell you one thing. There's sometimes I think, well, they're a hard case. Oh, I think dumb things sometimes. I think it's going to take God to do that. And I think, well, of course it is. But I keep thinking, if God can get me and convict me and save me, He can them. And if God can help us when we're in trials, He can help them. I know there's some difficult cases. I know there's some that seem impossible. I know there's some you've prayed for a long time and the answer hasn't come yet. Listen, don't stop praying. The God of heaven liable just to hear and act the next time you pray. It's a prayer that interferes. It's stopping the devil from having his will. In other words, Abraham is saying, devil, you ain't getting my family without a fight. I'm not letting them go down and me sit here and do nothing. Now, I can't do a lot, says Abraham. I mean, listen, I know there's no doubt Abraham tried to influence Lot to the good. And he was a good example to Lot, but Lot didn't follow that good example. The life of Abraham didn't work. The life of Abraham didn't keep Lot out of Sodom, but his prayer could bring him out. And that's why I say it interferes. It interferes with what the devil's trying to do. And Abraham said, you're not getting my family without a fight. You're not getting ones I love without me talking to God about it. We ought to do the same. It's a prayer that intercedes. He's praying for somebody else. Inventories he sees himself when he's praying for somebody else. Interferes, it hinders what the devil is trying to do. But I also believe this prayer is a prayer that insulates. Now, I know Abraham went one way and Lot went the other. And it's interesting, you don't have to turn, but in Genesis 13:12, it says that Lot pitched his tent toward Sodom. Lot picked the well-watered plain, the easy way, the good way, the comfortable way, the happy way, easier way. And it says there that he pitched his tent towards Sodom. I've said this often. I believe that Lot pitched his tent towards Sodom to where he could sit there at night and listen on the hillside to all the music and the laughter and the dancing and the lights he could see. And I believe he sat there in his tent door and he thought, boy, that sure does sound fun down there. My goodness, maybe I could just go and just go mingle around, just visit for a little while, and then I'll come back to my tent. We don't know all the details, but I do know this. The devil is alluring and drawing Lot towards Sodom. And I read it again today. Genesis 13 says a lot about Lot. One thing is missing. One thing is lacking. You know what it was? Prayer. Never one time do we find Lot praying. Wonder what difference it could have been had Lot, when he sat at that door and he saw the lights and he heard the music and he heard the laughter, if he had stopped for a moment and prayed. I believe with all my heart, God would have said, it may look good, but it isn't. It may sound fun, but there's a hook in that bait. He would have told Lot, no doubt about it, if you go down there, you're going to regret it. I said to begin with when I started this point, Abraham went one way and Lot went the other. But listen, Abraham could have turned around and gone back to Sodom just as easily as Lot had. but he didn't. And one of the reasons, no doubt about it, was the fact that he was a man of prayer. So it insulates, this kind of prayer insulates us from the attack, or at least the effects of the attack of the devil. It keeps us from doing something dumb. It keeps us from doing something wrong. It keeps us from being tempted and drawn into the temptation. It keeps us from doing what we shouldn't do. Because when you pray, when I pray, God will say, you know that's wrong. He will show us the end. See, all the devil tells you is, get all the gusto you can get. Look how fun it looks. That'd make you happy. That's what you've been looking for. You deserve it. He tells you those lies. But the Lord says, now it may look fun, but it'll cost you. And there may be pleasure in sin for a season, but there's also grief, and there's misery, and there's a payment to be paid. And one day you'll regret it. It'll cost you more than it's worth. That's what prayer will do. It'll insulate us from the draws and the allurement of the flesh of the devil. What did Jesus say? When he taught us to pray, what was one of the first things he said? Go in and shut your door. In other words, Lot should have gone in the tent and, if you will, shut the door of the tent to block out Sodom and got on his face before God. That's what we're supposed to do. It's a prayer that intercedes, inventories, interferes, insulates. It's a prayer that involves. I thought about the Monday morning quarterbacks or the armchair quarterbacks. That's real quick about, well, they should have done this. I don't know why in the world they tried that play. And somebody who has done nothing tells somebody who's trying to do something how they should have done it. But this is not sideline gymnastics. Abraham jumped into the middle of it all by praying. If you want to be in the thick of things, pray. Do you have any idea why there's such a battle to pray? Because that's the front line. That's the front line of the battle. And before we even get to the battle of interceding, before we ever get to the battle of praying, before we ever get to the battle of asking, before we ever get to the battle of expecting and receiving, we have to deal with the battle of, will I pray? And so often we lose that battle. We don't even pray. So we don't get the first battle won because we fail there. It's a prayer that involves. He was in the thick of things. You see, I said it already, his prayer was that could accomplish what he could not do himself. We lose sight of the power of prayer. We lose sight of the fact that prayer is so powerful. And if there's anything that we're failing in, it's in this thing of prayer. I ask the Lord every once in a while, Lord, what do we need at True Gospel Baptist Church? And even before people, which we need people, and even before power, which we need power, and even before peace or unity, and we need that, like every church, the Lord always says, you need to pray. Because without prayer, there's not going to be power, and without prayer, there's not going to be people, and without prayer, there's not going to be peace. Without prayer, none of that's going to happen. Our battle is with a battle of prayer, and prayer makes us involved. It puts us right in the forefront of the battle, and that's why the Lord said through James, you have not because you ask not. You have not because you ask not. What a difference prayer makes. I had on my mind this morning a particular message, and this message would have followed it really well as far as the subject matter, but the Lord decided to come and he preached the message this morning, and that's fine with me, but I'll still say this. We need to, like never before, pray for our country. Oh, we better pray for this election. I'm telling you, every election for the last several, I've said this is an important one. And I was telling the truth, it was, but I'm telling you, this is a big one. And I know my hope and your hope is not in the White House, it's not, but it makes a difference. The leader does make a difference. The leaders makes a difference. And we are in a country where we can vote. So I think we need to pray and we need to vote. But we need to pray for this country. Our country's in a mess. Our country's in a mess. Our country is in a mess. But it's not too big for God to help. Are we beyond revival as far as a nation? I don't know. I would think probably so, and that probably shows my lack of faith. But I also think it shows some common sense because of where we're at, and I think the timeline that we're in, because God tells us it's going to keep getting worse. But I do know this. I'm going to close with this verse. In fact, turn with me, chapter 19, verse 29. I've talked this evening about Abraham's prayer. It intercedes, inventories, interferes, insulates, and involves. I ask you a question. Did it do any good? And some might say, well, of course not. Sodom and Gomorrah, God consumed them. Well, it made a difference for somebody. Verse 29. And it came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain that God remembered Abraham. What does that mean? He remembered his prayer. He remembered his burden. He remembered his request. And sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in the which Lot dwelt. In other words, Abraham's prayer did make a difference for Lot and his family. It didn't save the cities, but it saved the family. Maybe your prayer won't change the world. It may not even change your nation, but it can maybe change a part of your world and the people you care about, the people that you know are lost. The people that you know are backslidden and cold and unconcerned and apathetic. The people you know who are hurting and discouraged and needy and struggling and fighting and losing. It'll make a difference in their life. It may not change the world, but it'll change your little piece of the world. And won't that make it worth it? I know this. Somebody somewhere prayed for me. And that's why I'm in the pulpit instead of hell. Well, that's why I'm in the pulpit or at the drug house. Somebody prayed for me. Now somebody needs you to pray for them. Let's do it. Expect a battle like never before because the devil knows the power of prayer. The devil believes in prayer more than we do. That's why he fights it so much. Let's stand together.